Blog Talk Radio.
I think I strained something. Pulled a rib.
Back muscle in danger.
Right.
Back muscle in danger. I'm doing. How you doing?
I'm doing.
But you no good.
You gonna make me start singing "What's Going On" again?
Oh Lord, here we go.
Hey brother. Okay, never mind.
It wouldn't be so bad, you know, if, you know, you could actually, you know, sing. I'm just saying.
If I could actually what?
Nothing. I didn't say anything. Other people may have said something, but I didn't. I don't know where that even came from.
I can sing when I choose to. I just choose not to. Thank you very much.
You know, do what you feel when you feel what you feel when you feel it.
You know, ain't never bothered me before.
I
guarantee you this.
Say that.
I'm going to guarantee you this. I'm not going to win American Idol, but I'm not going to be on the blooper reel either.
And I'm going to guarantee you, I'm not going to be on American Idol. I'm not going to audition for American Idol. But if you go audition for American Idol, I will be there to support you 100%.
Well, I'm only 25, so I qualify. You know, I meet the age requirement.
Yes, you do. You do.
Mm-hmm.
And the height requirement.
Ooh. That was ugly.
I'm just saying, you got to be this tall to get on that show.
Just because you're taller than me don't give you the right.
And you're one of the few people that can say that about me.
I wasn't going there, but since you said it, right, just because I'm one of a handful of adults that
right,
you're taller than.
People.
Right.
A handful of grown-ass people can say they're taller, that I'm taller than them. So,
don't
Kamal,
let me put on
Kamal,
no heels.
Kamal. Yeah, put on heels, that'll bring you up to my forehead.
What? How short do you think I am?
Everybody knows you 4 foot nothing.
Mm-hmm. And even when I put on my 6-inch stilettos, I'm still taller now. Mm.
Yeah,
that
okay,
was
okay.
My tongue out.
Okay. If it helps you sleep, we're good.
I tell you what, I put on them heels and I am 5'9".
Okay. I'm not good
and
at
that's
math.
That's the truth.
But last time I checked.
Most men aren't.
4'11 and 6 inches is not 5'9". But okay, if that's, you know what?
For the record, I am over 5 feet tall.
Yes.
I have not been 4'11 since I was 12.
Okay. Knowing better than to argue with a upset black woman, Yale moves the conversation along.
For his own health and safety.
For his own health and safety and the continued breathing thing that he likes to do. So,
right. And don't breathe too loud, because you know that gets on my nerves.
Yeah, I have a cousin the same thing. You're breathing too loud. Excuse me? I'm just trying to breathe over here.
Just trying to live.
Just trying to live.
Damn,
in
asthma.
Your world. Yes, I do have asthma. I'm asthmatic, but not emphysemic.
So, what's going on in your world?
Okay, so we I feel like we've got so much to discuss tonight.
We do. We have so much. We almost did a Thursday show last week.
We almost did a Thursday show. And I'm so glad we didn't, because so much news has happened since Thursday.
Right.
And we would have wasted.
But the news was coming in fast and furious last week.
Oh, man, wasn't it? It was like...
Right.
This
every time
in.
Every time I turn around, AP Mobile is going off.
Exactly. So let's work backwards. Let's start with today. And what I thought was a shocking news story that didn't make even my local newscast, the Baltimore local news. President George W. Bush had to be hospitalized to have a heart stent, a stent put in his heart. Who knew?
Right. That's a valid question. Who knew
he had a heart?
Although we aren't talking about Dick Cheney, so.
Right. Well, because Dick Cheney doesn't have a heart, and that's probably what happened to George W.'s heart, is Dick Cheney probably sent in agents to get a piece of it so he could continue his existence as the leader of the empire.
I'm so glad we don't have to hear his name every day.
But he wants us to. He'll find a way to sneak in. He'll have some comment every now and then to become semi-relevant.
Yeah, him and his little water-headed daughter.
Yes. But you know what? I'm confused. I know he has more than one child. And
yes,
I know one daughter. One daughter is a lesbian.
Yeah, I don't remember what her name is, though.
The other daughter is not Meghan McCain.
Yes, that is correct.
The one that's not lesbian is running for office.
Yeah, she's the one that's always running her mouth.
Okay. She's the one that has
Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann.
Any talking point that's progressive, she's on.
Right. Now, she, despite what comes out of her mouth, she is not an idiot like Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin. She says
now,
idiotic stuff.
I have to take exception with that. You cannot say Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann are idiots. They're like Pinky in the Brain. One of them is crazy. The other one's quite insane. Michelle Bachmann is insane. I think Sarah Palin's just stupid. They're pinky in the brain.
I will agree with that.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Thank you. Because if not, you can't distinguish them, and they're so easily distinguishable.
One's
married to a gay man. One actually finished her term in office and ran again and finished her term in office. The other one reads everything up in Alaska.
I wish they both would go away.
Yeah. That is a wish, too, that we have. You know, that's a hard one to not wish. But they both found their way.
Just you know, slink your way back into obscurity, please. Take Ann Coulter with you.
Mm. Mm. You know things are bad when Ann Coulter and Jimmy Walker are still a couple.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Ann Coulter and Jimmy Walker are best friends for life plus.
Oh, but not a couple.
Well, I think they're FWBs.
JJ?
Yeah, so it just goes to
Dynamite?
Tell you that she I don't even know why. I mean, because you look at him,
ugh.
I just, and you look at her, I mean, you just, ooh.
Well, does he know he's gay?
I don't really want to say Jimmy Walker is sexually confused. I'll just say if anyone ever had a face for radio, it would be Jimmy Walker. And I'll leave it at that. I'm not.
Yeah, but, you know, word on the street, Ann is a man, so I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I would like to punch her in the face like she was a man, but I'm prone to violent tendencies, so I have to refrain and restrain myself from time to time.
Well, you're not the only one. I have wanted to punch her like a dude on many occasions. Just pow.
You know, sometimes people like that, you just have to let them talk because they end up hanging themselves. Like Richard Pryor's, Eddie Murphy said back in the day, give somebody an inch, they take 2 inches, give a nigga a rope, wants to be a cowboy.
That's what he said. I think it would take a mile, but yeah, that's what he said.
I mean, but it is to give an inch, take your mile. But let's get that elephant out of the room real quick, because this is a big story today, too, which started last week after our show. Riley Cooper.
Ooh, Lord Jesus.
We're going to bring up the N-word. We're going to bring up the N-word, Riley Cooper, in the city of brotherly love.
So, can I say that when I read the story before I looked at the video, well, okay, so let's tell what he said. He said, I will jump over there and fight every nigger over there. You know, he was standing on one side of, I guess, a gate or something. And they said that the security was there. I originally thought he was trying to be helpful. I thought he meant he was going to help the bodyguards, you know, calm down the crowd. I wasn't excusing it, but I was like, oh, isn't that cute? He's trying to be helpful, you know. No, he wasn't trying to be helpful. No. This youngish white man was popping off at the mouth, and from what I can tell, he wanted to go somewhere and wasn't. It was at the Kenny Chesney concert, and I guess he wanted to go somewhere where they weren't allowed. And looking at the video, it seems to me that he was clearly inebriated, and he threatened to do some damage.
Well,
he threatened to do some damage. And then did you hear the girl on the video? She went, oh,
yeah,
he said nigga, oh.
Yeah, but she was drunk too because she slurred it
she
out.
Was
he
drunk
said
too.
Nigger. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so let's examine this from the whole atmosphere, the whole universal issue going on. When I initially heard that he had used the N-word as a football player, I didn't think much of it.
Right,
we're being sensitive. We're being overly sensitive. You know, things are said on the football field. You know?
Well.
But then you watch the video. And it's like
where
you said,
I,
it's not. Right. It's not that he just said it. He was declaring how badass he was. And it wasn't, I'll go over there and beat up every security guard as I'm going to beat up every nigger. Now, let's take into context where he was. He was at a Kenny Chesney concert. He was surrounded by his peer group. A lot of beer being drank. And he was feeling strong. Now, I have no doubt. You and I know that I don't care how liberal someone feels in their heart or how they are every day. When you get around a bunch of beer drinking, country music listening to white people, the N-word is probably used just as much as if you were standing in a crowd of black people at a Jay-Z concert who were drinking and feeling strong.
Right, and, you know, and if he had been at a Jay-Z concert and wasn't just blurting it out, but was, you know, rapping along to the lyrics of Nigga in Paris,
right,
I would have been like, oh, look at him, he's so cute. He knows rap lyrics.
Right, he wants to be one of us.
Right, isn't that special? Context is everything, people.
Context and intent. So
right, and contrary to what you read on a lot of these blogs that assume that black people get all twisted every single time somebody non-black uses the N-word, understand that the majority of us understand context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the context of this was, I'm getting ready to do damage. There was nothing nice about what he was saying. And I can guarantee he's going to have a rough time this season because I know there's one or two brothers talking that's like, oh, you want a nigga? I'll show you a nigga.
Yeah, and but, you know, to that point, I'm hoping that none of that does happen, just like it was with the aftermath of the Trayvon Martin trial. I'm hoping none of that happens because I don't want it to be said by anyone, see, I told you, that's how they would be. I think sometimes what really bothers prejudiced white people is the fear of what angry black people will do, more so than what black people will do. More so than what we actually do.
Clock cleaned. I'm not.
Oh, he's
trying
probably
to
going to take some extra hit.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get the man paralyzed, but I bet you he's going to get his clock cleaned more than once.
Yeah, he's going to get hit extra, and his teammates are going to rough him up. But in the context of football, probably his teammates will come to his defense if someone crosses the line as far as aggression, because at the end of the day, it's all about the color that you're wearing, not the color that you are when it comes to football. And teammates should rally around each other because it's all about protecting your own. Just like,
and
I will punch my brother
person
in the face.
Oh, go ahead.
I was saying, just like I will punch my brother in the face, but you better not punch my brother.
You better not punch my brother in the face. That's right. I tell people that all the time when they ask me, well, you guys say it, how come we can't say it? You know what? I can call my brother an asshole, but you better not.
You better not.
You have better
exactly.
not. And the next, and then any white person says, well, you know, black people say it all the time. See, when a white person says it, Tim Allen, you know, we get in trouble. Well, yeah, you know, you should.
And, again,
and why do you want to say it? You know, what is this elitism and this privilege and this act like, well, what am I missing out on? Black people can say, how come I can't? Why do you want to?
Yeah. Why is it that important? Because that's the word that you think will set everybody off, will change the dynamic of the conversation? I mean, clearly, in this case with Riley Cooper, he was at a concert with his peer group, and he felt strong. Not he felt strongly about the issue. He felt strong.
Yeah, he felt like he was on swole.
Right. And I've worked as security at concerts. And just by definition, you try to be as cordial and as amenable to people as you can be, but you have to be a bit of an asshole to be a security guard at a concert venue. Because, one, you're not being paid much. Two, you're being basically put in front of a crowd of people that outnumber you hundreds to one.
That are probably drunk off their behinds.
Most of the time, they're drunk off their behinds. And you have to be a dick to get your point across. Because if you don't, they will overtake the situation sometimes, and then you're lost. I worked 3-4 years, I think, at Meriwether Post Pavilion here in Columbia, Maryland, and I have been a complete butthole when I need to be. And this was years ago. This was over 25 years ago.
Wow, you were doing that when you were 50?
When your mama and I were dating. Don't play with me.
Ring the bell, sucker. School is in. What? Ooh, I'm a teller. I'm telling.
But in the late 80s and early 90s, let me give you a quick story. Two concerts I worked that will always stay with me in my mind about the situation. Worked every year, Jimmy Buffett comes to Meriwether for 2 or 3 days. And Meriwether Post Pavilion is an outdoor venue with a covered section, and it can hold anywhere
It has a colored section?
It has a colored section, a covered colored section. The colored people who are covered, who have cover money, can come in. But all total, Meriwether can hold about 21, 22,000 people. 7,000 or so in seated, covered seating, and 13,000 or so safely by fire department regulations on open lawn type area. Jimmy Buffett concert, we roughly get in 25, 26,000 people because people are going to pay the security guards, the underpaid security guards, little extra money to let them in to sit on the lawn. And most people want to sit on the lawn, drink, get high, get drunk, and listen to the music and dance like a bunch of idiots. Working a Jimmy Buffett concert one day, and this young lady came in, and her friends were holding her up. She was so drunk she couldn't walk through the gate.
She was lit before she got there?
She was lit before she got there. She was so out of it when she came in. I remember looking at her saying, "You all should take her home." Okay? We come in, concert's going on. About half hour before the main act, which is Jimmy Buffett, comes on, we got ambulances coming in. Because she continued to drink during the show and completely passed out. I mean, she could have died.
Wow.
But being in that peer group, drinking, having a good time, got to keep drinking. Jimmy Buffett, got to have a good time. She overdid it. And all her friends were drunk, and they didn't stop her, and they weren't looking out for her best self-interest, or her best interest. They were all, "We're going to have a good time at the show." Now, another concert I worked at Meriwether, somebody, some booking agent, some concert promoter thought, and this is like 1990, or 91, some concert promoter thought it was a good idea to have Ziggy Marley open for the B-52s.
Yay.
Where this group of diversity would meet in the middle is beyond me, but anyway. And in those days, you have to be a bit of a butthole, like I said. And I was assigned to work stage front before the concert, security, which is kind of a real cushy job because you're not out in the heat, you're not doing crowd control. You're basically just standing there and watching everyone warm up and do whatever. And Ziggy Marley was being interviewed by the Entertainment Tonight show before the concert. And after his interview, and I'm standing there, he decided he was going to give me orders to get him something to drink or whatever. And I just told him, I'm sorry, I don't do that. You have people for that. That's not me. Sorry. And he said something, and to this day, I don't remember what he said, but it caught me off guard. And you know I have, like, a high trigger. So...
Mm-hmm.
Ziggy and I were going at it. We were about to come to blows on the stage front. I'm about to go Knuckle City with Ziggy Marley. And, you know, I got security guards pulling me back. He's got his people pulling him back. And I'm screaming, I don't sweat you, Rasta boy. You ain't nobody to me. And one of my friends said, yell, does the term Jamaican posse mean anything to you at all? And it's like this light went on in my head, and I suddenly changed my demeanor.
See, Mr. Marley, what had happened was...
Would you like me to go score some herb for you, sir? Would you like some bitches?
You know, I have allergies and asthma, and I mix my Benadryl and my inhaler, and I just don't know what happened.
I fell down when I was younger a lot, and I'm sorry, yeah. But again, I'm with my group, he's with his group, and we're all feeling strong. It's at a concert. I don't know what comes over us as people, and this is exactly what happened with Riley Cooper. And, you know, from everything I've read, by other people and stuff, Riley Cooper is not that kind of person, quote unquote. But he was feeling strong. He was with his peer group. The problem is, everybody has a cell phone camera. Everything goes up on social media.
I don't know if he isn't that kind of person because, I don't know, my mom and my grandfather always told me that you really see what a person's like when they're drunk.
When they're drunk, yes, true. That's true.
Their true colors come out when they're drunk because they lose their pause button. So, you know, I mean, I feel sorry for him. Maybe he thought, you know, I don't know. I mean, I hear, you know, white folks all the time who think that, you know, because they've got a bunch of black friends, you know, they get a ghetto pass and they can say what they want. I don't know.
Maybe they can amongst their friends. But when you step out with, you know, there's that scene, have you ever seen the movie Fear of a Black Hat?
Mm-hmm.
There's that scene where the guy is like a takeoff on Vanilla Ice, and he approaches the group, niggas with hats, and tries to act like he's cool because he raps, and he calls all of them his niggas. And they snatch him up and turn off the camera and jack this fool behind. You got to be careful. You got to be careful, my white friends. You got to we can all be together, and you can use the N-word around me and ask me questions. I'm not going to be real cool with you using it, but if you think you are, you're probably safer than if you were to walk, I don't know, say, in Compton.
Right.
And threaten to
and
fight
you know what?
Every black person.
I'm not even uncomfortable with my white friends using it in a fact-finding mission. You know, tell me about the history of this word. Or if they're quoting somebody. Or if they're singing a rap song in front of me that has the N-word in it. I'm okay with that. But you know what? Mm-mm. And I don't even like the I don't even know what the word is. I don't like wigger.
Yeah.
I don't like them saying wigger. I don't like them saying jigger. Thank you for that, Jay-Z. Now, I personally don't use the term wigger, but I'll say jigger. But you know what? Have you seen my melanin lately? I can guarantee you I'm at least 3/4 African-American.
And you know what? It's interesting because I won't say jigger, but I'll call wigger in a heartbeat. When I see a wigger, I'll call a wigger in a heartbeat. Like, child, please, stop trying to be so cool, so fast, so hard. Just be you, man.
But see, for me, I'm like, what is the point? To me, it's like, what is even the point of that? Why would I call somebody a white nigger? If I'm going to call you a nigger, I'm going to call you a nigger. I don't care what your skin color is. And for me personally, that word knows no color boundaries. To me, for me personally, I associate it more with a behavior than, you know, a skin color.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point. And that goes back to the whole point with Mr. Cooper. You know, if that's what he thinks all security guards are, maybe that's why he's going to have a problem. But again, the thing that really offended me is he had a problem with one security guard. And he got put in his place. And he decided that he was going to group all security guards in this group of ass whoopings he was going to hand out.
And you know what? That's why another reason I believe he was drunk on his ass, because I don't care how hardcore you are. I don't care if you are the MMA champion. You're not going to voluntarily ask 6'7" burly men, regardless of their color, to beat your ass, because that's what was going to happen.
And, you know, and again, yeah, and it goes to the same thing. Had he, if this video said, I don't know who that nigga thinks he is, I'll jump over that fence and beat all the security guards' asses. Then you got a little different context then, right? Because maybe the security guard, this one security guard was a little extra. But again, I feel like he was feeling strong, and he's going to show all his Kenny Chesney listening friends, that he's so bad he's going to fight all of them. I have a job where 90% of the people I work with are black, and I'll beat all their asses because I'm that bad.
Right. You know what? What's my favorite saying? You're going to learn today. I would have called him on it. Come on.
I thought your favorite saying was "Jesus be a defense." I didn't.
Well, that's my other favorite. Jesus be anything. Right now, I want Jesus to be some rain.
Well, come here, because we got all of it.
Whew.
We got all of it. It's raining so much on this side of the country that a steroid-using baseball player couldn't hit a home run. Speaking of which...
Speaking of which, okay, so you saw my theory about the Dominican Republic.
Don't make me be Archie Bunker. I'm trying so hard to be a better person.
And I don't agree with you on that point, though, the Archie Bunker point you made. I don't agree with it.
All right, which side of my Archie Bunker point? The people, okay, let's.
I think
okay,
it's still America. I think it's
more
still...
more than just us. Were on that conversation. I mean, if more people listening to the show weren't on that conversation. So
I still believe that regardless of the current makeup of the teams, I think it's still America's pastime. I still think that there are more born and bred Americans who are baseball players than not.
Not
significantly.
Not Major League Baseball.
Do you know how many people play baseball?
Yes, but, I mean, okay, there are, not including the minors, because I didn't even look into the numbers on the, in the minor leagues, because there's double A, triple A, I mean, there's all kinds of, it must be 50-11 baseball team. But in the in Major League Baseball, in the 30 teams that are Major League Baseball, North American, United States-born citizens are the minority in Major League Baseball.
Is that your personal observation?
No, this is true. I looked it up. African American are no longer the majority in Major League Baseball. We've got football, and I think that game where they run up and down and throw a ball in the iron ring, I think we have those.
But aside from race, you're saying that born and bred Americans, be they Hispanic, white, Asian, black, are the minority of Major League Baseball now.
You have Japanese Americans.
So who is it?
I'm sorry.
Japanese?
You have Japanese
players, Cubans,
Korean
and
players,
Dominicans.
Japanese, Korean, Dominican, Cuban, and oh Lord, I know I shouldn't have closed that page. There's another group, but they, as a collective, are the majority. Minorities are the majority in Major League Baseball.
Didn't know that.
Yes.
That doesn't change my thought on the drug train coming out of the DR.
Well, part of the problem is your theory, and again, we have to let everyone else in on the secret, on the story. There are a lot of Dominicans and a lot of Hispanic players that were caught up in this sweep that Major League Baseball handed out the other day. But the majority of the drugs are from American-made companies, American companies, American-oriented companies are the big drug PED companies, performance enhancement drug companies, organizations.
And I know quite a few of them are in Florida.
Florida,
and
California.
I still think that I'm onto something. It was just too many of them. Besides A-Rod and Braun, there were 12 other people. Two of them are Venezuelan. The rest of them were Dominican. And I'm not saying that it's not happening in the United States, and I'm not saying that, you know, the PEDs aren't coming out of Florida and California. But I still think that the DR needs to be heavily looked at. There's something going on.
Yeah, and the other thing is a lot of Cubans will nationalize into the DR to be allowed to come over here to play. Because there's some really weird thing where Cuban players cannot come directly from Cuba to play in America unless they defect. But they can go to the Dominican Republic or other South American countries and then come into the United States to play.
Something ain't right, man.
But for – oh, and let me just get on this real quick. Alex Rodriguez is from the Miami area. I think he went to – he did go to University of Miami. But
he was born and raised in New York.
Right, but he got his start. His major league debut was with – oh, what's the name of that team? Oh, let me think. Oh, yes.
Oh, you know what?
Seattle Mariners.
And you know what? When they see somebody holding up a sign at the stadium, F A-Rod, that's me. I have never forgiven I have never forgiven, up until he got busted, I had never forgiven him for leaving the Mariners. Because it was some bullshit when he did it. But now that he got busted, he's all yours, New York. Enjoy him.
$250 million. $250 million.
And I haven't even, I don't think I've forgiven the Mariners themselves for breaking up that team. That team was amazing. 116 wins. And then the next year they allowed the team to be broken up.
Got rid
and
of,
they haven't been
Ken
right
Griffey
since.
Jr. Got rid of
Ken Griffey. Yeah, look,
big
Ken
unit.
Griffey Jr., Mike Cameron, God, what was his name? It just flew out of my head. The catcher.
Big unit. The catcher.
No, big unit was the catcher. No. Big unit is a pitcher. Our better pitcher was Jamie Moyer at the time.
Yeah, Jamie Moyer, who just stopped playing last year.
I'm not even sure if Big Unit was on that team at the time, but I'm trying to think of the catcher. He was awesome. Ichiro. I mean, there were at least seven amazing players in that lineup. What's his other name? God, I can't remember his name because it's been, like 13 years now. But that whole lineup just was amazing. I remember Mike Cameron at Wrigley Field, and he hit four grand slams. The record was five, and he was at bat. The entire stadium was on their feet. Didn't matter, White Sox, or who's at Wrigley Field, White Sox or Blue Sox?
And
or Pink
what,
Sox.
Wrigley
I think
Field
Sox. Yeah.
Is the White Sox. The Red Sox play in Boston.
Okay, and who do the Pink Sox play for?
Pink Sox play for the Montreal Alouettes.
Got it. Or are they the Vatican? Is that the Vatican's baseball team, the Pink Sox? Everybody was just on their feet because it didn't matter because what they were witnessing, they were witnessing history. It didn't matter that we were beating the shit out of the Sox. It didn't matter that you know, somebody from the opposing team was up. We were witnessing history, and I will never forget that. Consequently, he didn't get his fifth grand slam. I think he got a double out of it. But, I mean, that whole season was magic, and A-Rod was included in that season. Although I don't remember him being particularly, he wasn't like the star player because they all were equally good. It was just
Ken Griffey was the one that had the panache, right?
Well, if you're talking about panache if you're talking about fan favorite, Edgar Martinez, hands down. Second to that would have been, but he wasn't always a DH. Second to that probably would have been Ichiro. And then third, Ken Griffey Jr. But Ken Griffey Jr. was also on the downswing of his career. So he was battling injury. You know, I mean, we love him for his personality and what he had done in the past, but for that particular season, he wasn't the standout. So, ask A-Rod.
Awesome team. They had an awesome team, no question. No question. And from all I've seen and watched of A-Rod, his career, and just seeing the size of the dude, I don't understand the need for any PEDs. I mean, to me, as a baseball player, once you hit a certain level, no matter what you do, they think is great. If you hit 15 doubles in 45 games, that's great. That's fantastic. I mean, you're already on your way to the Hall of Fame, if not Hall of Fame mention. But you take those 15 doubles and you turn them into 10 home runs and 5 doubles, you're still great.
It's so
I know.
You know,
and it's crazy. I mean, I used to talk to my grandfather. If Lil TL is listening, we have a great uncle, Uncle Johnny Bob, who played in the Negro Leagues. And
time
my
out.
Grandfather used to.
Time out. We have to stop and talk about Uncle Johnny Bob? Really?
His name was like Jonathan Robert.
Johnny Bob?
Yeah, Johnny Bob, Uncle Johnny Bob. Look,
okay.
Look.
Okay.
I didn't call him Uncle Bubba.
No, but okay, Johnny Bob. Okay.
His name was Jonathan Robert, and everybody called him Uncle Johnny Bob. I don't know why.
You know, when you have two names, you could be a redneck. I'm just saying. Just saying.
Well, you know what? He was rednecking that ball when he was in the Negro Leagues. I'll tell you that much.
That's right. That's right. There's black rednecks, but go ahead. Go ahead.
But nonetheless, we have, let's see, Uncle Johnny Bob would have been either our great uncle or our great great uncle. Anyway, he was in Negro Leagues, and I used to talk to Grandpa about it, and he would tell me how upsetting it was to him and, by extension, Uncle Johnny Bob, because, and this was back in the 80s before they were really fighting over salaries, because he was like, you know, when Uncle Johnny Bob played, you didn't play for money, you played for love.
Because
you didn't get a whole bunch of money. And I feel like, you know, A-Rod saw that $250 million paycheck, and he did whatever was necessary to, quote unquote, earn that. And I hate that. Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, I'm going to say, to your point, once he signs that contract for $25 million a year with baseball, that contract is guaranteed. If he stops hitting, he's still going to get that $25 million a year.
Well, they probably have an out clause.
Right, well, baseball, there are people who play baseball who just aren't any good anymore. The Orioles just finished, I think, last year, the year before last, I think anybody out there listening who knows can inform me if I'm wrong on the date. But the Orioles just recently stopped paying Albert Bell, who has not played baseball in at least the last 10, 11 years. But they picked up his contract and picked him up and gave him this tremendous contract. And he was out of baseball, and they were still paying him millions of dollars.
That's stupid, because if I were the Warriors, I would have an out clause.
But that's baseball.
Where else can you go? Can anybody on this planet go to their job and, you know, sign a contract and just say, "Ooh, I'm not coming in no more," and still collect their paycheck?
A-Rod.
No, but I'm saying you and I couldn't do that.
No, we can't. We can't. But baseball, baseball and NBA contracts are like that. I mean, A-Rod plans to make $61 million if he can't.
A-Rod.
He can't play anymore. As opposed to, if he finishes out his contract, he makes $100 million. But if he is forced into retirement by Major League Baseball, he only gets $61 million.
So, but what if he gets injured and can't play anymore? Does he still get that $100 million, or does he get
insurance will pay the $61 million on probably the rest of his contract? If he gets injured playing baseball, then he gets the money from he gets the whole contract. I'm almost certain. If he's out,
you know,
at their 40 and breaks his arm. But you know, I've never understood baseball anyway, because baseball, as again the national pastime, is losing fan base to football. I mean, it's not a big deal to go to a baseball game and there be 4,000 or 5,000 people in the stand. You go to a football game and there's 4,000 or 5,000 people in the stands, it's a disaster. Now,
but
granted,
you know what?
There are 162 games in a season, so you spread it out, and there's only 16 games in a season for football. But most football teams, with the exception of like Jacksonville and I think there are two other teams that don't sell out. But most of those most NFL football teams sell out every week.
But you know what? I have always had a problem with these big paychecks. I mean, I was cussing like you would not believe over A-Rod and his, you know, $250 million. And it's not because I'm a hater. You know, people deserve a paycheck. But in order for, you know, him to get that $250 million, that means my ticket prices are going to go up $10 a ticket.
Yep.
That means if I don't want to starve because you can't bring in outside food, I got to spend $11 on a hot dog.
Yep. A beer.
That is ridiculous. I remember my fondest memories, some of my fondest memories as a kid, was with my grandfather fishing, going to baseball games.
Yep. On two
Papa would call up. Papa would call up and go, let's go to a game. He'd get me out of school early. And we'd go sneak off to a 1 o'clock game, 105, Padres.
And we would go to night games.
I can't remember. And I know that they have, you know, the family section and they have the cheap $7 seats. Well, they do here. But, number one, those go really fast. Number two, they're uncomfortable. You sit on those hard bleachers. And it's right by the beer garden. Do I really want my kids around a bunch of drunk baseball players? Oh, but if I want to be, you know, in the family section, oh, that's fine. I'll just pay $30 a ticket. It's crazy, you know. It used to be that you know, we were talking about this when I was complaining about the Harlem Globetrotters. I can't take my kids to the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, you got to plan that out. Harlem Globetrotters are coming in August, and it's September. Okay, let me get all four kids. Let me start saving now to take all.
Right,
four kids.
I guess I'll catch them next year. It was $27 a ticket to see Harlem Globetrotters last year. You know, and I don't really miss football games because I've never really felt that football games were a family outing. It just because it's just the violence, you know. I took in my first football game as a teenager. I was like 13. But before that, I mean, I remember being at baseball games at the age of 5.
Yeah,
and it was
and I think
always
that's what you get kids. You take the kids young to baseball games and they can get into it and learn about stats and players. And whereas football, for the most part, you got a bunch of big men beating into each other, running into each other at high speed.
And right. I mean, if I could afford it, I'd take my girls to a baseball game in a heartbeat every single week, if I could afford it. Football, no. I don't think I've ever even watched football. We watch the Super Bowl together. But other than that, you know, we don't watch football with the kids on a regular basis. But baseball, we watch it here, but we can't afford to go to a game. And even if we could afford to go to the game, guess how much it cost to park?
$25. Yeah, that's another thing that gets you.
What the F?
That's another thing that gets you. I mean, this coming Sunday, the Ravens are going to have an open practice session at the stadium. So it's free. And there'll probably be 35,000 to 40,000 fans come out to see it. To see in practice because most of those people aren't season ticket holders and can't afford to come watch them play during the season because, like I said, my tickets are $100 a pop each.
Right.
And those aren't the best tickets.
Easily $5,000 for season tickets. Easily.
Yeah. If you have really good seats, you're going to pay, you know, so, okay, case in point, there's a 10-game season, two games are a preseason game, and that's $1,000 a ticket, a season ticket, for, you know, to see 10 games.
What, say what? Repeat that?
$1,000 for a season ticket.
Oh, okay. I thought you said, okay. I heard something different.
So, and these are not I mean, these are very good seats. They're not the best seats. I'm in the end zone. I'm in the 100 section, but I'm not right on the field. But I love my seats because I have, like, cover over my head, so when it's raining or snowing, I'm dry. But those tickets on the 50-yard line or on the sidelines are exponentially more expensive. The ones in luxury boxes, forget about it. You know, I don't even want to think with those costs. And even though I have these tickets, I'm not the PSL owner. And the PSL, you know, you got to pay for that as well, for the right to own this ticket, to buy those tickets. So it's another hook, in my opinion, but still.
And as a baseball fan, I'm just really, really pissed. I'm pissed that we're paying all this money to watch these people who aren't even honest athletes. And I don't mean honest in terms of he told a lie. I don't mean honest when he cheats on his wife. I mean, his skills aren't honest. He hasn't gotten where he is by being a naturally great player.
Well, he probably has. He's just done extra to get an edge, which is cheating. I mean, you get there on your own merit, even if you're on the drug. It's always been my contention. I don't care what steroids you take. There's no magic potion that's going to make you hit a curveball. Either you can or you can't. You know, now it may take what would normally be a ground rule double and drop it, you know, outside the stadium, but you still have to have the ability to make contact with that ball and put it in play. That is a God-given talent. Not everybody can
do that. I'm not saying that he wasn't once great. I will not take that from him. F. A. Rod. But I will not take that from him. But, you know, has he been as great as he was at 22 or 27? No.
None of us are. None of us are. None of us
exactly.
are
and so,
who we were at 22 at 35.
Exactly.
Like,
so, you know, at some point, his ability was dishonest.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be different. And there's also, you know, it makes no sense, but there's also that idea that, you know what, it's cheating because it's not available to everybody. But if PEDs were available to everybody and everyone used them, it would not be cheating. It's not like this is some super secret formula that only a few people have. It's that it's not available to everybody. Superstars are superstars because they're better than everybody else. Go ahead.
I don't want it available to everybody else because that means that there's going to be 500 players with the quote unquote ability to command $250 million contract, which means my ticket prices are going up even more.
Or you could look at it in the reverse. If everybody can hit the ball a mile, then nobody's special. So you're not going to get $250 million because you're not doing anything above and beyond anybody else. You're doing what everybody else does. It's just like weight. To me, it's like weight training. When people started lifting weights in football, everyone thought they were weird and freakish, and it would, you know, you couldn't. I remember my father will tell you, people who lifted weights and play football, they would say, you won't be able to move as well. You're not going to be as flexible. You know, you just have to be naturally strong and tough to play football. But now everyone lifts weights because the benefits of lifting weight for a football player and a baseball player and a basketball player far outweigh not doing it.
But you
so
know,
everyone
you know,
has access to weightlifting, right? But not everybody has access to the recovery drugs, which is basically what steroids are. People don't understand. Steroids don't make you strong per se as much as they help your body recover faster and build muscle quicker. But that stuff's expensive.
But here's the deal. I want gasoline prices to go back down to $159 a gallon. It's not going to happen.
No.
It's not
going to
happen.
It's because
there's greed. So, yeah, if everybody, you know, can take steroids and everybody's on the same playing field, it's not going to make it get any cheaper. Yeah, I mean,
well, no, because now the genie's out the bottle. The genie's out the bottle now as far as contracts. And, again, just with football, like with football, now that Joe Flacco got $120 million to win the Super Bowl, if you have a good quarterback and his contract is up, whether he wins the Super Bowl or not, that 120 is now the standard. So you're going to be you may not pay your quarterback $120 million, but you're going to have to come at least $100 million, you know, because that's the standard. It all salaries roll uphill. It's sad and it's crazy, but that's the world. This is the profession we've chosen to watch and pay for.
I ain't paying for nothing no more.
I want to play this clip, and then we'll go into the next segment. And once you hear the clip, you'll know why and what's going on.
You know how you can tell how pretty a white woman is? The value, you look at her, and then you wonder how long they would look for if she was missing. Come on, take a look. Take a look. Look at this. Look. I saw you look mad, sweetie. How long if you was missing? How long you think they were? Exactly. She went. You know the deal. I ain't saying nothing wrong. White woman's life is valuable. What's his name? Joran Vandersloot? Right? We find out he was a serial killer. Man, he kills women. That's what he do. He do it well. You know what I mean? We know the girl that he you know, supposedly had... what's the girl in Aruba? Natalie Holloway. Right? But the one, he just killed the girl in Peru. What's her name? Exactly. Look how bad she said Natalie. You said Natalie. Natalie Holloway, that angel. Y'all said that like Family Feud. All right, name a white girl been missing for 5 years in Aruba. Natalie Holloway. Survey done. Name a Peruvian girl that was killed yesterday. What is that big head third world Peruvian bitch's name? It has to be Yordis or something goofy. Don't get mad at yourself. I gave it to you. You saw how fast she said Natalie Holloway. Diana Ross right here said Natalie. She knew her name. That white girl with Natalie Holloway. Remember football players in Miami went missing? They went sailing. They looked for them for 8 minutes. Maybe. They just sent somebody at the edge of the beach. I don't see them. We have to call off the search because there's too much sun. The conditions are abnormally difficult. If I go sailing, I'm taking a white baby on a keychain with me. If my boat go down, they gonna find me. I'm gonna have it hooked right to the side of my belt. And I'm gonna dress the baby real white too. I'm gonna put sweatpants on it and a pair of Ugg boots, and I'm gonna take a picture.
Was that Patrice?
That was the late great Patrice O'Neill.
I knew I recognized that voice.
In his last stand-up concert performance on television, which was Comedy Central's Patrice O'Neill, Elephant in the Room. And that's from a couple years ago. So I had to play that clip to segue into this next section we're going to talk about tonight. Ariel Castro.
Ooh, Jesus,
Kamal's Hispanic cousin from Cleveland.
You know what? You're not going to talk about my Cleveland people no more.
Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, Gina DeJesus. These three
Wait, Gina DeJesus, or as Reverend Al calls her, Gina DeJuices.
Oh, God. How you going to be a Rev? How you going to have Reverend and your Reverend Al, and you can't say Jesus? You can't know that DeJesus?
Well, see, here's the thing. He knew it wasn't Jesus.
Oh, Lord.
He knew damn well it wasn't Jesus.
Sometimes,
but
Rev.
But he couldn't get to Jesus, so it was just Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Gina D.
I told you the difference between Reverend Al and George W. Bush was when George W. Bush went off script and stopped reading from the teleprompter, he got in trouble. Al, when he starts reading, when the rest
of
right,
the producer
is going to get messed up.
You know the producer's in his ear, hey, Seuss! Hey, Seuss! Ninja, hey, Seuss! He done done it again. Somebody
cut
his
mic. And
then
the producer is like, let him go. He's on a roll. It's just like Animal House. Let him go. He's rolling. It's just...
You know, I had to take off my glasses. I laughed so hard. I was like, Juices, what has he been smoking?
Maybe he needs to go back eating donuts. And this, I'm just... Okay, so Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, and Gina DeJuices.
Gina DeJuices.
Proved Patrice O'Neill's theory. White women are valuable. Their lives mean more than anybody else, especially black people. But white women, they looked for Amanda Berry for 10 years. They never stopped looking for this woman for 10 years. And then when they found
her, and they being the authorities, because the family. Go ahead.
No, you had a valid point. Say it. Make it.
The family of Gina DeJesus never stopped looking, but law enforcement had just pushed it to the back burner and was like, she's a runaway.
Right. But Amanda Berry, people knew when she was rescued and she said, I'm Amanda Berry. Everybody in Philly, in Cleveland, knew who she was. Everybody.
Right,
she was like Amber. Okay?
Right. And because I think they had just once again, I don't know, maybe did like some cold case thing. She was recently in the local news.
I'll be honest, I never heard of her. But
well, we're not local.
We're not local. But they never stopped looking for her, and when they found that this fool had kept her ass imprisoned in his house, chained to a wall, for 10 years. Lord, did the Cleveland justice system come down and come down hard.
Not hard enough according to Castro.
Right, they didn't look hard enough according to Castro. According to Castro,
right.
If they wanted to find her, they would have interviewed him.
Right. Those are the words that came out of his mouth to the judge.
Don't blame me because your white girl was missing. Blame the FBI. They didn't come to my house.
They didn't come to my house. And don't blame me. Blame them. They should have never came with me.
Right. It's on them because knowing that I was, like, had problems, they should have stayed away. Because I'm not a monster.
Right, right. I'm not violent. I only hit my wife because she made me. But I'm not a violent person. That's what he said.
This is a prime example of why sometimes your lawyer needs to speak up and tell you to shut up. These are the claims. Kamal and I are known to exaggerate a little bit sometimes, but listen to me and understand, we are coming straight from what came out of this man's mouth when he had his chance to speak to the judge to plead his side of the story before sentencing was handed down in the kidnapping of Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, and, oh, yeah, the other chick.
Gina de Jesus.
The one, oh, yeah, she's here too.
Right, the little brown one.
He came out of his head with, I'm not a monster. Don't blame him. The girl should have never come with him. The FBI never came to his house. Everything going on in the house was consensual. They told him
they loved him. They had a harmonious existence. We had a happy home. That is what this man said.
He said to the judge and to the gallery of people gathered for his sentencing, because keep in mind, his lawyers plea bargained, and I don't know what the law firm was that represented him, but I don't know what the outcome would have been if he had not plea bargained. But keep in mind, none of these women died. Some of them at some point thought they might die, but none of them died. It was traumatic, it was dramatic, and it was horrific what they went through for 10 years. But none of them died. And when he said, I am not a monster.
Sound like Frankenstein. I am not a monster.
What came to mind to me, and I called Kamal this day, everyone needs to know, I called Kamal today, Thursday, when they came down with this, and I said, it reminds me of what Robin Harris said in his stand-up, the late, great Robin Harris said in his stand-up, when the judge would hand out death penalties and people say, I won't do it again. And the judge said, I know you won't do it again.
Because we going to make sure.
We going to make sure. The judge did not condemn this man to death. What he did, and we've all heard it now, but this is so funny to me, when Kamal and I talked about this, he got life in prison, plus, all right, first of all, let me explain to people who think life means, like, till you die. Life does not mean in jail till you die. Life, depending on the jurisdiction, is 15 to 25 years in jail, in there. So, but he got natural life. When they say natural life, that means you're not coming out of prison. You're in there for the rest of your life. He got natural life plus, hit him with it, Kamal.
1,000 years.
Where they do that at?
you know how long 1,000 years is?
Life, natural life plus 1,000 years. You understand?
Did you realize what year is that? That is the year 3013?
No. That's not 3013. That's 1,000 years after he dies. So if he lives another 40 years, that's 1,000 years after that. Natural life plus 1,000 years. Like the man said in Stir Crazy, you can kiss the baby.
Like I said, that's a star date. That is a
slayed me then. Slayed me now.
That's when we cease to use the Gregorian calendar. That is the second coming of Christ. That's 1,000 years. A 1,000 years is a millennia.
After you die, not today. You can't go into prison today and say, okay, I only got 1,000 more years of this shit.
Right. No.
You have to say on your deathbed, okay, after this, it's just 1,000 years.
Look, 1,000 years ago, to keep it in perspective.
What's the year?
Did we even have... 1,000 years ago, we were just figuring out how to use the wheel properly. I don't even think bacon existed 1,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah, bacon been around forever, yo.
Well, the animal.
Yeah, bacon been there. Bacon.
Really?
Been there.
We've been eating bacon for 1,000 years?
Yeah, yeah.
All
okay.
Right, I'll take your word for it.
Listen, the Battle of Hastings. Famous battle, European battle in England, Battle of Hastings, year 1066. Okay? Think about it. Where we were from 1066 to where we are today is where technology will be in 1,000 years. 1,000 years from now, plus, say, 40, they may discover a way to bring people back to life.
Or teleport. Look, could we even really write 1,000 years ago? I know Shakespeare was born, what, 1492? Or is that when Columbus discovered America?
That's when Columbus discovered America.
And
no,
I use discover in quotes, in air quotes.
Right. Okay, for the True Blood fans out there, Eric Northman is 1,000 years old. He was a Viking when he was turned into a vampire.
How about cars have only been around for 100 years? 120.
Hello. How about 1,000 years ago, Dick Cheney had just started his ascension to the Empire throne.
I don't even know.
That means 1,000 years from today, 1,000 years from today, someone may reexamine the case of Ariel Castro and the three missing girls, Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, the other chick, and say, you know, it wasn't that bad. Let's see if we can exonerate.
See if we can exonerate.
No, you can't, because it's only 1,000 years, and he lived 40 more years after the sentence. So we got to wait another 40 years before we can even reexamine his case to exonerate this fool.
I think 1,000 years was the last time there was a flourishing kingdom in Africa?
Wait a minute now. Egypt. Egypt in Africa. Don't get it twisted.
Was it flourishing?
Well, I mean, then you got Shaka Zulu. He was around less than 1,000 years ago.
Well, was it flourishing is the question.
Yes.
Nobody argued that Shaka Zulu could kick somebody's ass. But was it flourishing?
You got Ethiopians and Haile Selassie. That was less than 1,000 years ago. That was less than 100 years ago. So, you know, come on.
Yeah, now, I don't think it was flourishing.
1,000 years ago, the Mayans were still a civilization. So 1,000 years from now, if this planet is still revolving around the sun, this man still got time to do. White women's lives are valuable. None of them died. One lost sight in her eye, not discounting that, not a good thing.
But that's what he said. I didn't kill none of y'all.
I didn't kill none of y'all. But the judge said, you shoulda. Because you got life plus 1,000 years.
Right. And the judge was trying to find some type of guidance. And he was like, well, you know, there's this case, you know, blah, 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 blah. But nope. You beat that one, so can't do that. This case set precedence. However, you beat that one, so I'm just gonna have to send you on my own.
Here we go. And then he said, "There is nobody in this world who will disagree with what I'm about to hit you with."
Nobody, not even his own family, disagrees with
him. Oh, his own family. His son was like, "Yeah, my father crazy, that motherfucker, yo."
Right. Right. That's what his daughter said, his brothers, his niece, and his brothers ain't really happy that they got caught up in this mess.
Right. I still haven't figured out how they lived in the same house and didn't know they had three women chained up in the basement. But, hey, I'm not in Cleveland. It's a different kind of party going on down there. I don't know. But I do know this. Ariel Castro, life plus 1,000 years. Nobody died, and George Zimmerman is driving around Texas with a gun in his glove compartment, getting pulled over for speeding and being told to slow down.
Out of control. And you know what? I didn't believe his brothers for 1 minute, but the girls never implicated his brothers, so it must be true, because I'm sure those girls would have said something.
Oh, yeah, they'd have been singing like canaries. Pretty white canary.
But you know what? Michelle ain't playing, and my heart goes, all seriousness, my heart goes out to her, and I give her props, because given what, not only what she went through physically and emotionally, she took care of those girls. She was birthing babies and dressing wounds, and she's been the only one to speak up, and she done the 4-9 looks. Little thing, but she has been on it. But you and I talked about, we remember the sister of one of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims.
Lord, yes.
If that had been my child, we would have had a different family statement.
Yes.
A much different family statement. It wouldn't have been, we pray for you, you know, but no. My family statement would have been something like, now, I'm not asking for prison justice. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. But if he should fall on a broomstick 17 times, I'm okay with that.
My family statement would be him buried outside. Next.
Right.
Well, look, in the last of the show, I wanted to bring our guest in a little bit earlier in this, but that we had to get this point across. young lady named Cindy, who has a real interesting story. And Cindy, are you
Hello.
There?
Yeah,
Hi,
I'm here.
Cindy,
Hi, Cindy.
Doing?
Hello.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I've been listening to the whole show.
Love it. We've got issues.
We've
got issues. We're trying to work through them. Some of us are anyway. But Cindy is in the running to have her product sold through Walmart.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool.
Work it out, work it out.
Cindy, tell everyone what you do and what's going on.
Hi, listeners. My name is Cindy Tawia, and I am the manufacturer of Diva by Cindy hair care products, which help stimulate and grow the hair and also helps women. And then the creator of Doggy Diva, which is a dog product for long-haired dogs. So basically, I'm a former registered nurse who left nursing to follow her passion, her purpose, and her dream. And that's led to a healing ministry of sorts. And my products have been kind of a vehicle to help women who are in homeless shelters and help heal women who are, you know, going through adversities in life. And I just want to thank the host for having me, Yale, for having me on his show just to, you know, speak about what is going on. It's been a long
journey. What does your product do? It's hair care products for
hair
women.
Care products.
What does it do?
It helps women who have issues with shedding, breakage, damage, hair loss. It restores their hair. For women who have natural hair or want to transition to natural hair, it helps them do the transition without losing their hair. So it's basically a product to stimulate hair growth for women of color. And then we also have products for men, you know, we have a stimulating shampoo and conditioner for men with dry, itchy scalp, women with dry, itchy, shaky scalp. So it's a hair-growing product. And we have 13 items altogether, from shampoos to conditioners to the hair grower to a leave-in detangler that can take the tangles out of almost anything. So we have a full line. And it's called Diva by Cindy. Mm-hmm.
Diva by Cindy. So how did you get connected with the Walmart program?
I actually had a friend who just forwarded me a link and said, hey, Walmart is looking for entries for products that will be viable and be able to be sold in their on their store shelf. So I thought, hey, I've, you know, been around for 5+ years. It's worth the risk. Let me do this. So I submitted the information, submitted the YouTube link, and among like 5,000 entries, I went on to the next round. So now we're in the next round, and now it's time to get people to vote on the, you know, the appeal of the product and basically just to vote to get us, you know, get us selected by Walmart.
Okay, so I'm going to put the link on the Nightlifer online page on Facebook. You can find us, Nightlifer Online. And people click the link and vote for you to for your product so that you can be selected to go to the next phase?
Yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
And
okay.
real quick, do you have your own website that you could give us?
Oh, yes. It's divabycindy.com. So D-I-V-A by Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, .com. And then I also have Doggy Diva by Cindy, which is D-O-G-G-I-E by Cindy.com. And if anybody wants to know what we've been doing with the women in the shelters, that's the divaproject.org.
Well, Cindy, I'm going to put all those links up, and we're going to have people vote. We've got over 50,000 listeners now, and I think at least 5 or 6 of them think we're sane enough to listen to what we say. And we're going to get more people to come in and vote for you. And next week, I'd like to have you come back and explain more about the program that you're doing with the shelters.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Yale. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Cindy. Oh, thank you, Tamar.
All those songs I said that I love you.